In the Good Job Brain system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups, the quizzers who pose questions and the brave men and women who answer them. These are their stories.
Positively perky podcast pals, welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 93, and I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your sassy suspects sussing out science and suspense.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
So today is our best of 2013 show, celebrating, featuring, and highlighting the best, the weirdest, the silliest, the funniest, and the grossest moments from Good Job Brain.
It's a clip show! Yay! Like real television.
We are just four pub trivia and trivia nerds who are nuts about weird facts, secret histories, and we're so glad we get to share our passion with the world. And before we start the show, I want to quickly thank our listeners and fans for all of your support and feedback. It's really touching when you guys write us. And tweet us and Facebook post us.
Absolutely.
Thank you guys for all of your support and welcoming us every week into your ears, into your ear holes.
Right on in there.
Yeah.
We're just a little independent hobby podcast, so you guys keep us going, and we appreciate it a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot.
Colin's nodding emphatically at the microphone.
Colin, they can't see you
nodding. So today's show is all about celebrating the greatest 2013 moments. And we had, 40 plus episodes, more than 400 different segments, ranging from quizzes, silly to challenging, to mind-blowing facts. We've enlisted the help of our listeners on Facebook and Twitter to help us curate some of our coolest moments this past year. So if you're a Good Job Brain listener, we invite you to travel back in time and laugh with us and laugh at us. And if you're a new listener, welcome, and you are sure in for a surprise.
So what kind of trivia podcast will we be without quizzes?
Yeah.
Fun, weird,
bad one.
You're right. That was a question, and you got it right.
Thank you.
But you did not buzz in.
Bad.
That's my favorite part of this podcast, is making quizzes for you guys and answering the quizzes that you all make for me, for us. And here are some of our memorable quizzes. Okay, I have a kind of a short quiz for you guys about processed foods.
Our favorite kind.
Yeah. As I was writing it, I was like, oh, these are things I would put in the bunker in the 50s, maybe, or something like that.
Yeah.
All right. We'll start out with the king of processed food, Spam. Mm.
Yeah.
The original name for Spam was what?
Oh.
Karen.
Is it not spiced ham?
Yes. Hormel spiced ham.
Oh, okay. I mean, I knew it was...
And it was renamed to Spam, and the guy who suggested Spam combined spiced and ham. What's the official reason Hormel gave for naming it Spam? What does that Spam stand for?
So it fits on the tin.
No.
Did they say it stands for something?
Something that's not spiced ham. They named it something else.
Like S-P-A-S.
Yes.
Super, super processed ass meat.
No, the last... You almost had it.
Almost.
I mean, what is shoulder?
Processed kind of
pork.
Almost. Shoulder, pork, and ham.
Shoulder, pork, and ham.
Yeah.
Okay. It doesn't stand for that. Yeah. It would be spa.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
Who suggested ass meat on the survey? Why did we...
Wrote it in such a large font.
How much did we pay for this survey?
All right. Tang, the orange-flavored drink powder. Was Tang invented in the 40s, 50s, or 60s?
Oh.
Colin.
I will say 60s because I know it's associated with the space program.
I thought it was made for the astronauts. No, that is not true.
I thought so too. Invented in 1957 and it was marketed in 1959. So like right there. But it was popularized by the astronauts. Which astronaut is most closely associated with Tang? Yes.
Huh.
Neil Armstrong.
Nope. Another one.
Louis Armstrong.
No. Nope.
Virgil Gus Grissom.
Nope.
Is that an actual...
No.
Close? Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is.
John Glenn.
Oh, okay.
John Glenn.
Right. All right. But Tang was developed just because it's a low-cost orange drink, right? It wasn't developed for the space.
It was not developed for, but it's...
It's not like astronaut ice cream or something.
It's not astronaut juice. It's...
That's something else entirely. Yeah.
It contains very little astronaut these days.
You don't have to squeeze too many astronauts. The cost... I mean, in the 50s, they didn't have astronauts. Yeah.
There's no juice in Tang. There's no juice.
Oh, I don't think so.
It's powdered. It's like a powder. They might perhaps use... is a juice flavor.
Essence. Yeah.
Natural
but
flavors.
But it is powder.
Yeah. There may be beaver secretions.
Oh, there might be. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Various other secretions.
Okay, Ovaltine.
Uh-huh. I love Ovaltine.
Oh, it's the best.
It originated in what European country?
Oh.
Switzerland.
Yes.
Oh.
Hey.
Huh. I have a fate. I don't know if this is right, but my association is... Nestle made Ovaltine, and Nestle is a Swiss company.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think
so. I got it right for the wrong reason.
Okay.
We can find out really fast.
Yeah.
Wait, don't look. I'll look. Okay. Because I have more.
There's more Ovaltine.
More Ovaltine when...
Don't look up facts about Ovaltine or else you'll spoil yourself. Whoa, it's made from blood.
Yo, I can see that.
Irony. No, Ovaltine is a registered trademark of Associated British Foods. Nestle acquired the rights later.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So they're connected.
Right for the wrong reason. Yeah, that's fine. Sure. Yeah, I'm still right.
Ovaltine, its original name was Oval Maltine, a combo of two of its main ingredients. What were they?
Oh.
Eggs, I'm guessing.
Uh-huh.
Like Ovos.
Malted milk.
Yes.
Wow.
There's eggs in there?
They were like, oh, it's a breakfast, a food replacement or a meal replacement kind of drink.
I always wondered. I just thought. Oval.
Yeah.
Ovo.
Latin for egg,
It's kind of weird now.
Whatever, man. I'm still going to drink it.
It's still tasty. It's good. In the 1930s and 40s, two famous U.S. children's radio shows were sponsored by Ovaltine. One was Captain Midnight. The other was what?
Little Orphan Annie.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
That's the decoder ring thing.
From A Christmas Story. Yep.
Yeah. And then do you know what their code usually ended up being?
Be sure to drink your Ovaltine.
If you rearrange the letters in Ovaltine, it also spells Vital One.
Vital One.
Yeah.
Like, all right.
Some conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
No, they used it in their ads. Kids are like, what?
Mom, I think I'm the Vital One.
I need some Ovaltine now.
Yeah. Other anagrams of Ovaltine.
Okay.
Oh.
A violent.
Oh.
Sure. So that's
not alive.
Funny, they didn't focus on that one.
Because Vital One and not alive are antonym. Yeah.
Yeah. Close it out with a delicious, delicious product that has a lot of preservatives in it.
All right. We've done Tang. We've done Ovaltine. We've done Spam. What could be the last processed food? The
last one is Cheese Whiz.
Cheese Whiz!
Quintessential processed food. Spray cheese.
Yep, you're right. Mm-hmm. You're right.
Oh, man. Well, Cheese Whiz is the jarred stuff.
You're thinking Easy Squeeze. Or Easy Cheese. They also had Squeeze Cheese.
Squeeze Cheese.
Which is really,
Wait, so what?
Cheese is a very rhymable word.
Yeah, believe it or not. Yeah.
So Cheese Whiz originated in 1952, and it's a it's a delicious cheese product. It's described as a cheese product.
It certainly is the color of cheese. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
It's a cheese sauce, right? It's like a liquid cheese.
Yep. A liquid cheese. So besides being a food product, you could also use it
to disinfect wounds.
To grease the skids on your yacht.
For other purposes. Should I have you guess or should I just tell you?
Wow.
I can't.
Go for it.
Personal lubricant.
You know what? Probably. It's not on this list, but...
Condition leather.
Antifreeze.
No, I wouldn't put that in the car. I probably wouldn't. I think that would be a mistake.
Floor wax.
Preventing corrosion on tools.
You know what? Maybe. So, a stain remover. You could remove grease stains from and wash clothes as usual with Cheese Whiz.
What?
What? Okay. No.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
A hair conditioner. You can rub it into your hair and leave it out for half an hour and then shampoo and rinse thoroughly. And it does something
maybe
with your...
Maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's cheese. I'll never tell.
Caitlin, did we have Colin had that segment a couple of episodes ago?
Oh yeah, touch of yogurt and
a look of buttermilk shampoo.
She's whiz.
Maybe she's born with it.
Honey, you look fantastic. You want to get some nachos?
Stand still.
I crave just wait nachos. A moment. Yeah.
And then finally, you can use Cheese Whiz if you run out of shaving cream.
But why were you putting shaving cream on your nachos in the first place?
No, to shave.
Cheese Whiz. These are pro tips.
These are pro tips.
Yeah. Absolutely guarantee you that if you're using Cheese Whiz to shave, you are a single dude. You are a single dude.
But you know what? At least you're shaving.
You're trying.
Yep.
Maybe you'll meet some lovely girl who conditions her hair with it, and you guys can just really save on your grooming products.
Just live it up.
Yeah.
It's one big jar in the bathroom.
Why is there Cheese Whiz in your bathroom?
Oh, it's a family size.
Don't worry about it.
Family size Cheese Whiz. Ow. My face hurts.
There you go.
All right, my turn, and I have a music round.
Ooh.
A little bit of a twist. So I was listening to some Chinese pop music the other day, and was just kind of reliving, you know, my childhood and teenage years. And then I was like, oh my God, this would be a great quiz segment.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I didn't know this growing up, but a lot of the pop songs in Asia, they're songs in Chinese, you know, Cantonese or Mandarin, but the song itself is actually a foreign language song. And they did this a lot.
So they write new words to the melody?
Yeah, they would just write in the native language and then an existing song. But the thing is, I didn't know that. So it wasn't until I moved here, I'd be like, oh!
And you would hear the original.
I would hear the original English version and be like, I had no idea that growing up this other song was a cover version.
Okay.
So my music round is...
I like it already.
Is, how do I describe it? It is international foreign language covers.
I love it.
Of... Mm-hmm. English language songs.
All right.
But the difference is it's not just, you know, someone covering some other song. This is released as a whole different title and released as a whole different single.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But the melody and parts of the song is
so it's not released as like, oh, the localized version of such and such song. Yeah. It's just you have no idea of the connection.
Yeah. Unless you look at like the songwriting credits or something.
Right.
Yes.
All right. Right.
Okay. So I'm gonna play clips of these foreign language songs and before I'll tell you what language and maybe the title of the song, even though that doesn't really help. And listen to see if you can identify the English language song and identify the artist, the original artist of the song.
All right.
How's that?
All right.
Cool.
All right. Sounds a little complicated, but...
No, it sounds fun.
Okay.
Let's do it.
And for the first one, I'm going to play the song that I was actually listening to that inspired me to make this quiz. 要有自的魔镜，但表情彼此表情，悄悄地暗示这是冷战。到时，直到目前，我爱你，你也爱我，这道理过去也听我说过。
Oh man, what is it?
Is the song, is it Silent All These Years?
Yes. Colin, yes, Silent All These Years. Who sings Silent All These Years? Big hit.
Who was Silent All These Years? Who was that? It wasn't Suzanne Vega. Was it Kate Bush? Was it
later?
Who was it?
Was it Sarah McLachlan?
Tori Amos.
Yes. Of course.
I was like, I know this song, but her singing is messing it up. I can't hear what it is.
Well, and number of times I've heard the Chinese cover of Silent All These Years, one. Number of times I've heard actual Silent All These Years, zero.
Okay.
Really? So that was Fei Wong, very, very famous superstar, and the title of the song is Cold War, but based on Silent All These Years.
That's great.
All right. Next one. This is sung in Greek by, oh God, okay, pardon my pronunciation, Alcestis Protosalti.
Okay,
that's pretty good.
Yeah, not bad. A Greek pop star.
I don't speak Greek or would have no way of judging that. Good to me, yeah.
And the song title is All That I Fear.
Okay.
In, well, translated from Greek. Dana. Right.
Is it Nickelback?
Yes!
Okay.
Wow.
Your face. What song?
I could sing probably the chorus, but I don't. I've been down, to the bottom of the...
This is how you remind me.
That's it, yeah.
How you remind me.
Yeah. Wow,
I think they're,
that's
their
great.
first big hit for Nickelback. Good job.
That's great.
This is one that is not a direct cover, but you can tell by the song is there, but the melody is a little bit different. Hmm. And this is Japanese. This is from Japan. Hmm. By Dragon Ash, and the title is Grateful Days.
Okay.
Here's a song. See if you can recognize the what's being sampled.
All right.
Okay.
Dana.
Smashing Pumpkins.
Yes.
Today.
Yes.
Yeah.
Today.
By Smashing Pumpkins.
Good,
that
good
little
call.
Loop.
Yeah, the little guitar intro. Call. Great.
Awesome song. I love this Japanese rap version. All right, here's an oldie, and this is by Adriano Celentano in Italian. Italian translation of the title is I Will Pray.
Io lo so perché tu la fede non hai. Ma se tu lo vorrai, crederai. Non devi odiare il sole perché...
Colin.
That is Stand By Me.
Correct.
By Ben E. King.
Yes.
Whoa.
I, for the longest time, I thought it was Ben E. King, like Benny Hill. Mm-hmm. It's Ben E. King. Very good. All right, another Asian language one. This is by Big Bang from Korea. Also another hip-hop kind of rap thing. See if you can identify the background song.
Okay.
Of course, Dana. Of course.
This Love by Maroon 5.
Correct.
I knew it like two chords in.
I can name that foreign song in two notes.
All right. So this last one is a little bit of a twist. So there's a big hit in America and in English language countries, I'd say, in 1994. And this is an R&B song. It was really popular. And this song was actually based on a foreign language song. So it's kind of reverse.
Uh-huh.
Okay. What I'm going to do is play the original foreign language song and see if you can identify the 1994 song and the artist.
Okay.
That was a cover.
Okay.
That was an English language cover. And the original version is Japanese.
Okay.
So the song itself is called Sukiyaki.
Correct.
Yeah. What else do you want to know about it?
What artist or what group sang that song in 1994 that made a very big hit?
Oh.
Right.
It was actually covered a couple times. It was covered in 1980.
Yeah, because it was from the 60s or 70s.
Yeah.
Who was that? Was that like Jodeci or somebody
like
that?
All for One. Mm. No.
Who was it?
4 p.m.
Mm.
4 p.m. sang the song, and let me play a little clip of it.
Yeah, I did not know that was a cover.
That song has a really weird history. It became popular in the U.S.
Yes.
With the title Sukiyaki, which has nothing to do with the original lyrics.
No way. Covered in 1981, and they just called it Sukiyaki because it's like, well, that's a Japanese term.
Sounds Japanese.
Right, yeah, that's basically it, yep.
Very good job.
Very enlightening.
International music round.
Very neat.
Long-time listeners to Good Job Brain might remember a segment that we did a few episodes back called Did Chris Get It Right? In which I asked my fiancé to ask me some questions that things that girls would immediately know but that boys may not know. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask Colin questions that Regina and some of her friends asked me. We'll see if you can figure it out, but then you guys all have to guess as to whether or not I was able to get it when the question was posed
to me. And these are girly questions.
These are girly questions. Cover the spectrum from makeup to clothing to television shows to books to things to middle school things, actually.
Okay.
And so, yeah, we went it went all over the place this time. We'll get this one started off. So, what was the name, Colin, of Sabrina the Teenage Witch's cat?
Oh, man.
Oh.
Oh, gosh.
No, yes, it's supposed to be easy for you, Kat.
It was something like Dexter or Felix or
Dexter.
Magic or something.
You're close.
I don't remember.
Karen?
Salem.
It was Salem.
Oh,
yes.
Of course. Something witchy related.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, did I get this right?
Sabrina the Teenage Witch. There's a comic,
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say that you got it right.
I did know that one. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good question. That's a really good question.
And then just the most terrible cat puppet, right? It was awful.
What is Raggedy Ann's boyfriend's name? Or, you know, paramour or whatever.
I didn't know if they were related or not.
Or brother.
I thought they were brother and sister. It's Raggedy Andy, right?
Yes, it is.
I always thought Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy were brother and sister.
That's what
I thought they were like, you know.
Together?
An adulterous couple living in sin. I don't know.
Oh, my.
Because it's not like their last names are the same. Just their first name, Raggedy.
I know. Well, they are the last two of their kind.
Just to ensure the survival of the species.
Maybe they're all of the above. We don't know. Let's not judge. Dolls.
But did I know that?
Yes.
I think I did know that. That's pretty good. What are culottes? Colin.
Culottes. Oh. They're like, they're not quite a skirt. They're not quite pants. They're not quite shorts.
That's the worst answer.
That is true.
Yeah, okay. That's what they are. Yeah.
I thought they're like cut pants with wide legs that looks like
It was explained to me was that they're shorts, but they're very wide in the legs. So they look like they sort of look like a skirt. Now, did I know that?
Probably.
Yeah, been around for a while.
Yeah.
I'll say no.
You're right, I didn't. I mistook them for capris. I said, are they the pants that go about 3/4 down your leg?
Okay.
No. Yeah. Now, what are Spanx?
Spanx are...
you watched 30 Rocks.
Spanx are a body-shaping undergarment.
Yeah.
That's what they are.
I don't think you knew.
I think you did.
I think he did.
I did know what Spanx are. I said, they squish your fat in.
I tried to put it in a much more delicate term.
Yeah, to which Regina said, they're called shapewear.
End of quiz. End of
conversation. Yeah.
So moving on. What is a cootie catcher?
Cootie catcher. It's the little, isn't the little thing you would do, like weave with your hands, like a Jacob's ladder kind of?
No, it is not. It's not a cat's cradle or anything like that. Okay.
I feel like my sister, I know this,
I feel like our two co-hosts know what this is.
Yeah.
So what is a cootie catcher?
It's like a origami little piece of paper that's folded up and you can bend it different ways.
It's that fortune teller origami.
The fortune teller one, right?
Yes. Okay,
back and forth.
That is what it is, one of its many names.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did I know that?
Yeah,
think so. You went to elementary school in America.
I'll say no.
You're right, Colin. Maybe I did not know what that was. No, I mean, I knew that, you know, the origami fortune tellery thing that the girls played with. I didn't know that they had a name for it. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Also, back in middle school, one of Regina's friends asked me, do you know what the pencil test is?
Yeah.
We'll see if Colin knows what the pencil test is.
What is the pencil? I do know what the pencil test is. What? Oh, this is about bras, right?
It is?
Yeah. So the pencil test is... Am I actually going to say what this is on the air?
Yeah.
The pencil test is you lift up your boob and you put a pencil under it. And if the pencil falls to the ground, you don't need a bra. Right? Wasn't that
what
it is?
That is what the pencil test is.
Yeah. Americans are weird. If the pencil falls, you don't need a bra.
Right, because there's not enough
nothing to hold
to overhang and to necessitate containment. Support, rather.
Wow.
I don't think you knew this. I'll say yes.
I'll say no.
I had no idea. What's the pencil test?
Oh, my God.
Wow.
You're in a little boy bubble. You just didn't know what was going on.
So you grew up with a brother, too. Yeah.
Right, yeah, exactly. We didn't know. Finally, what a boy band was Nick Lachey in?
Oh, man, I always get these mixed up. It's
why it's difficult.
He was NSYNC?
No.
Right.
All right. Backstreet Boys?
No.
You're crazy.
Like a lower tier than those.
Yeah. It's a number.
Oh, 98. Was it 98 degrees?
Yeah.
That's it. It was 98 degrees.
I did trash you.
Did I get that right? Right.
No.
Yes.
I'll say yes.
I did. I got it right.
Wow.
I didn't know. I sort of guessed. It was like 98 degrees. Because I figured it wasn't one of the other, the big guns of boy bands.
Very good.
So I did okay, I guess. I don't know.
Opened my eyes in some of those things.
I think you acquitted guys pretty well.
Yeah. So do people want to ace? What's acing the pencil test? Is that when?
I don't think it's not like a pencil exam. It's more like a litmus test.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, that's good.
I'm so excited to share this segment with you guys. I've been hyping it up this whole morning.
I don't know if that means we should be nervous or not.
I know. Maybe you're
too
excited.
Well, I'm nervous for you. I hope it works. No.
Okay. So this quiz segment is called William Shakespeare Goes to a House Party. Stay with me.
Okay.
Imagine William Shakespeare. You invite him to a house party you're throwing. And, you know, at house parties, you play dance hits, like popular songs.
Sure.
So basically what I have are clips of William Shakespeare, or someone pretending to be William Shakespeare, reciting famous party song lyrics, but in Elizabethan Shakespearean English. And I need you guys to tell me exactly what line of lyric he's actually interpreting.
Okay.
Got it.
All right. Here we go. Number one.
Not any betrothed maidens. Not any betrothed maidens. Presently, uplift thine palms.
And I can recite it to by myself.
No, I believe the line is, all the single ladies, put your hands up.
Yes. Now you guys know the flavor.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah. All the single ladies, put your hands up.
By Beyonce. I guess.
Bar-Dionce. Beyonce. Shakespeare.
Am I right?
Am I right, you guys?
I had a lot of alternate titles for naming this segment. I just went with William Shakespeare Goes to a House Party. But another one was William Shakes His Rear. And Who Wants to Barty?
No. Just terrible.
Get out.
Shakespeare, your booty.
All right, number two.
I wilt ne'er relinquish thee. I wilt ne'er causeth thee dismay. I wilt ne'er diverteth and forsaketh thee.
Colin.
I was never going to let you down. Never going to give you up.
No, I'm sorry. It's never going to give you up.
Oh, sorry.
Never going to let you down.
I'm terrible.
Oh, never going to run around and desert you.
Yes. By the estimable Sir Richard Astley.
Is he sir?
No.
Oh, no.
Yeah. All right. Next one.
Allow hoofs to be fancy free and wandering. Disrobe thine mules donned on the Lord's day.
Oh.
The line is, I will read it. Allow hoofs to be fancy free and wandering. Disrobe thine mules donned on the Lord's day. And mules is not the animal.
Your shoes.
Your shoes off on
your Sunday shoes. Your Sunday shoes.
Get foot loose.
Yeah.
Oh,
Put on your Sunday shoes. Take off your Sunday shoes.
What's the first line though? Before this,
just foot loose.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. I was trying to back into it after getting burned on the Rick Astley. Yeah.
Good job, by Kenny Loggins. Foot loose. All right. Next one.
Halt! Rally! Hark! The frosted knave hath returneth with modish forging.
All right, stop. Collaborate and listen. Ice is back with a brand new invention?
Yes.
Nice. Oh,
good God. Wow. Some part of my brain has hung on to that lyric.
Good job.
By Vanilla Ice.
Yes.
Of course.
Halt, rally, hark. Last one.
How? I bade you! What gamester hath emancipated mine hounds? What gamester? What gamester? What gamester?
I did it.
Dana.
Who Let the Dogs Out by Bahaman.
Yes. Yes. The line is, who let the dogs out?
Who?
Who?
That's it. Thank you guys for participating.
Many thanks to William Fakespear.
Yeah.
Quizzes are good. Quizzes are good. I mean, maybe I don't like my ignorance being on display when I get the wrong answer. So maybe my favorite part of Good Job Brain is the segments, when I get to actually prepare things and come in and actually know all of the answers to the things. You know, when we just bring in a whole bunch of bizarre facts, maybe grouped around a theme, maybe we're telling a story. Like that's what I'm most thankful for. This is our Thanksgiving episode, right?
No.
Okay. Anyway, here's some of our most memorable segments and facts and all that kind of good stuff.
So if I have one takeaway from that segment, it's don't drink mercury.
No, definitely not.
I talked about it before.
We have talked about it before.
Yeah, but I mean, it's important enough to hit over and over again.
Yeah, public service announcement. We've specifically talked about it before, Karen. We talked about Emperor of China, Qin Shi Huang,
yes.
Right? And he was emperor from 259 to 210 BC, and he was kind of a big deal. He was sort of the first emperor that really kind of unified all of China. And what's funny to me about him is we've talked how he died before, so let's just cut to the end very quickly. He died by ingesting mercury as part of a way of finding an elixir of life. You know, mm-hmm. This was just an obsession of his, was, I want to be immortal. I want to see my my rule never end. The irony is that over the course of his rule, he survived a lot of assassination attempts and coups, and what brought him down was his own doctors and his own alchemists and his own physicians.
Irony.
Mercury.
Mercury.
I was reading a little bit more about his story, about specifically the circumstances of his death. He was out away from court when he actually died. He was out and he took some mercury pills that his team of physicians had prepared for him, got gravely ill, and died in no short order. And
very anticlimactic.
And they're like, oh crap, he died.
Oops.
So now what happened next was a Weekend at Bernie's level of farce to cover up the dead emperor. So now, as I said, he had survived a lot of assassination attempts, and, you know, he was a unifier. There were a lot of people who would have been seeking to take his place as soon as they found out that he was dead. So I mentioned they were on the road. They were away from the seat of power. So all of his advisors, you know, and his right-hand men, they didn't want word to get out that the emperor had died because they were afraid of what was going to happen to this power vacuum. So they continued their tour out in the countryside. So, you know, they're carrying the emperor in the little box, you know, with the servants. They would dress him up in new clothes.
Oh.
They would prop him up so that you could sort of look through the window and see that there was somebody in the carriage. But they wouldn't let you get too close.
No.
And no one could. I mean,
nobody except the most trusted advisors, right?
No,
because as they're traveling through villages.
It wasn't out of the ordinary.
Right, that's true. Yeah, it's not like commoners in a village are running up to the carriage.
Yeah, high-fiving him.
But so, I mean, this is in the middle of summer. He died. They're traveling around, and it started to smell really bad.
Bet it did.
Really bad. So this is the solution they came up with. As they're traveling around,
Dryer sheets.
They apparently, they wrapped him in dryer sheets. No. They apparently, the account goes, they got a cart full of rotting fish. Two carts full of rotting fish.
Yes.
And had one cart ahead of the Emperor's carriage, one cart behind the Emperor's carriage to, do their best to mask the odor of decay.
No, because then if you saw... You would see the carts of rotting fish, and you'd be like, oh, well, that's just the rotting fish.
Yeah. But no one would question why is he sandwiched by two carts of rotting fish.
I mean, because he's the emperor, man.
The emperor's whims.
Yeah. Whatever he wants.
Brown M&Ms.
They would bring meals up to his carriage and, take away plates and things like that, so that even people in the retinue wouldn't necessarily catch on.
They would
stage fake meetings, where the advisors would come up and pretend to be talking with him and, go away afterward. This went on for 2 months.
What? Whoa. That is so long.
Until they got back to a seat of power where they felt comfortable enough to kind of announce, the emperor died. I don't know if they said that it was their fault for giving him mercury or not.
I don't even think they can trace
they
it back
then. Know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Well, also, they didn't know it was harmful. They thought it was going to help him. Yeah. They thought he died
in spite of
him.
And also, he's been ingesting mercury all this time, too. Like, it wasn't just those two pills made him die. During his reign, while he was alive, he would take a lot of mercury, and it just builds up.
And, I mean, it was just totally magical and mystical, and I can believe it. I mean, it's metal. It's liquid at room temperature. Maybe I'll drink it and live forever.
I think that's why we have to keep reiterating you're not supposed to drink it, because it's so pretty, and you want to put it in your mouth.
You want to.
And, if the emperor tells you he wants to drink it, you're going to let him drink it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I would like to tell you the story of a product that was actually quite successful, but had something happened to it, was it just a fatal blow that it never could have expected and could never recover from. Beginning in 1937 and going very strong until the early to mid 1980s, there was actually a certain dietary supplement. And what this thing was, it was a candy. Basically you would eat the candy and it would act as an appetite suppressant. So you just have a piece of it before meals. And there was a drug inside of it that acted to suppress your appetite. It was quite popular. It worked. It was so popular that it had, many, many television commercials and radio commercials for this product. And I'll play you one now.
I've tried fad diets, powders, pills. Still, my weight's been up and down like a yo-yo. Until the AIDS plan taught me how to take off weight and help keep it off.
AIDS may taste like a candy, but AIDS contains one of the most effective appetite suppressants you can buy. Let the AIDS plan teach you how to take off weight and help keep it off. Try peanut butter AIDS.
Yeah.
That's going to be a problem.
Try peanut butter AIDS.
Try peanut butter AIDS.
Yes, so the name of this wonder drug was AIDS. It was AYDS, as in it aids you. You can help you lose
AIDS
weight.
AIDS you losing weight.
Yeah. So what was in AIDS was it was an oral anesthetic that you guys have maybe used at some point in your life. It's called benzocaine. It's the name of the oral anesthetic.
Oh, yeah.
And it numbs your mouth.
Like cough spray.
So if you have a cough, if you have canker sores or whatever, and you need to numb something in your mouth, you might use its over-the-counter benzocaine. And they would put it in chocolates. Then you would eat one of these chocolates with a hot drink, and you would essentially numb your mouth. What this would do is when you then sat down to eat a couple of minutes later, food would not taste as good, so you'd eat less of it. They did clinical trials. You will just eat less food, and you'll lose weight. You can, I think, buy them. I mean, not the AIDS brand, which is long gone, but they sell things like Slim Mints today, that do basically the same thing. But it's kind of fallen out of favor as a diet plan because it's tricking yourself. Today, what we try to do with diets is we actually try to get people eating the right kinds of things. Yeah. Right, rather than just,
not chicane.
And so this is a very unfortunate thing for autoimmune deficiency syndrome to come along, take this product that had this name since 1937, and suddenly, as you turn that perfectly normal, totally inoffensive commercial into something incredibly offensive and or hilarious, depending on who you are.
Possibly both,
For that to come along and do that, and that was just something unfortunate. But here's the fail in all of this. It was made by a company called Jeffrey Martin Incorporated. They told Time magazine in 1985, when Time was writing about this product with its unfortunate name, what they said was, "The product has been named AIDS for more than 45 years. Let the disease change its name."
Oh.
they doubled down.
They doubled down. They're like, we are not going to change our name. You can change the name of the disease.
Oh, no.
Take that.
The company, yeah, the company was soon sold, and the new CEO of the parent group, when asked, said, obviously, with a name like AIDS, we'll have to do some remarketing. Yeah. Following this up with, obviously, our product does not give anyone AIDS.
I just want to go on the record.
So this new executive now realizes, okay, clearly we should, you know, do something with the marketing and the naming of this product now. Now it's like 1987. I believe it was the New York Times ends up talking to like a branding expert who suggested, she said, oh, they should change it. They should come up with a new name that also incorporates the old name. So she said they should call it Skinny from the makers of AIDS. So they still didn't quite get it. Even though it was purchased by a new company, they went over it and over it, and they finally, in 1988, they were like, we've renamed it, everybody. After all this work, they renamed it to, I am not making this up, Diet AIDS.
Yes. What? They get it. Because they get it. Because they get it, that's why. This whole thing, it was just a slow motion train wreck of marketing.
Like, somebody was like really digging in. No, this has been around a long time.
It was a failure to realize what was going to happen. And yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know what it is? We may have talked about this in the show before, but it's the sunk cost fallacy. The idea that, I've spent so much money in this case marketing and building this brand name since 1937. We've invested millions and millions of dollars into it. We can't just dump it all and start over again. It's a fallacy. Like, you can't just look at all the money you've thrown after something. You have to make the right decision.
So, fellow listeners, you'll be as impressed as I was when you find out that Karen this morning actually ran a marathon before coming in to record the show.
Thank you. It was a half marathon, but still, I'm very proud of
him. Oh, well, I'm only half impressed.
I'm very achy.
So I want to talk to you guys, you know, in the vein of cheating, about one of my favorite all-time cheating stories. Hmm. And, you know, if you play enough trivia, if you go to enough pub quizzes, eventually you're going to be asked a question about Rosie Ruiz.
Rosie Ruiz.
All right. So I'm glad it sounds like maybe you haven't heard of her, so I can enjoy a little bit of the story here.
I think Chris seems to be
nodding appreciatively.
I have.
Yeah, the topic of the show is cheating, so let me just cut right to the chase here. And she may have been a cheater. So, you know, Karen, in the world of marathons, the Boston Marathon is one of the most, if not the most prestigious marathon. Right. And, I mean, you had told me this a while ago. I mean, it's a big deal. You have to qualify. You can't just sign up and race this year. Right.
Oh, okay.
You have to have post a good enough time, right, to get in.
Yeah, you have to have a time within your age range and your gender. There is a qualifying time. You have to make that or faster in order to even get not even a spot, but just to enter the race.
If you're racing the Boston Marathon, you are a good runner. You know what you're doing. So in 1980, let's go back many years here in the Wayback Machine to 1980, Rosie Ruiz crossed the finish line with the clock at 2 hours, 31 minutes, 56 seconds.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Some context for those of us who are not Karen and don't run marathons.
Yeah. So Karen's reaction should put that into context. Yeah. Now this, yeah, just for a little
That's
bit more
like
context,
my half marathon.
That would have been the fastest time a woman had ever run at the Boston Marathon.
Okay. Wow.
It would have been the third fastest time ever run by a woman anywhere in a marathon.
Okay.
So it's not a good time. That's a great time. Right from the start, people were a little suspicious of her time across the line.
Why? Just because it was super fast?
Well, no one had ever heard of her. Right.
For one thing,
so there was that.
Exactly. Like, no one ever heard of her. And a lot of these people know each other. You'll have frequent winners, you know, 2 or 3 years in a row sometimes.
Or they're Olympians sometimes, too.
Sure. There were other more obvious signs that perhaps something was amiss. She didn't really seem to be out of breath at all. she wasn't even really sweating all that much, you know? Her shirt was really comparatively dry. People were sort of really eyeballing her, like, what is going on here? The second and third place women were like, she didn't pass us. We didn't see her. We don't know who she is. We did not see her on the course. And then on top of all of this, right, now, as I say, you had to qualify to run the marathon. So she had run in the New York Marathon earlier that year, which is also a fairly big deal marathon. Mm-hmm. The time that she posted was 25 minutes slower. So to make an improvement of 25 minutes in 6 months is a big deal. So nothing was adding up. People were really, really suspicious of Rosa Ruiz.
But she was good enough to qualify.
And that's the thing.
She's still good.
That's the thing. And so for a lot of people's minds, it's like, all right, well, how did she trim this time off her race? What was she doing? She must at least have some running skill, but what's, right. you know, what's her angle? So over the course of the next few days, there was also some other information that came forward that was really damning to Rosie Ruiz's case. There were a couple students, friends, who had come out to watch the race, and they said, oh, we saw her burst out of the crowd of spectators like half a mile from the finish and kind of just barge her way onto the race course. And at the time, they remember thinking, like, who is this lady? What is she doing? Mm-hmm. They didn't think much of it. And then when they saw, you know, later in the news reports, they're like, that's the lady we saw. Yeah. Rosie Ruiz, we saw her kind of just come out of the crowd half a mile from the finish.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So it seems to be, I have to
and
say.
And this is what year, by the way?
This was 1980.
So no cell phone cameras. Very few.
No one's tweeting. Crazy lady came out of the crowd at half mile mark.
There might not be a lot of actual physical evidence.
And before the times of, you know, smartphones and stuff, every runner nowadays have a bib, right? That has their number, but also built into the bib, or actually they give you a little tag that you put on your shoe as an RFID tracker, basically, for each personal runner. So as you're running through, say, the 5K split, there's something built on the ground that will communicate with your RFID tag and then puts it in the system. That was their split time.
That RFID thing. Do you remember there was a celebrity who gave their personal trainer, like, there are like somebody who's running with two.
Oh, no. They're like,
that happens.
Clock my time for me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that happens. Some people will run with multiple bibs.
The time is really recording the time of the RFID tag crossing the finish line.
That person.
So, but the most damaging story that came out was from a woman named Susan Morrow. And Susan Morrow was watching news reports, and she lives in New York, and she recognized Rosie Ruiz. Mm-hmm. She's like, I know this woman. I ran into her the day of the New York City Marathon. So Susan Morrow was on her way to watch a friend run in the marathon. She was heading to the finish line, and she was taking the subway. On the subway, she sees a woman, you know, on the train wearing running gear and looking kind of down. She went over, she sat down next to her. They got to talking. Turns out this is Rosie Ruiz. And Rosie told Susan Morrow that she had dropped out of the race of the New York City Marathon, you know, a little bit before the halfway mark. She had hurt her ankle. But, you know, we're going to the same place. We're going to the finish line together.
Oh,
let's
my gosh, she's
together.
Taking the subway
she
there.
She took the subway to the finish. They took the train. They went to the finish line of the New York City Marathon. And together, they walked. And because Rosie Ruiz had her runner's gear on, they were getting waved through barricades. They were getting through without anybody really questioning. Mm-hmm. Because she looked like, she was limping along. She was an injured runner. They got to the finish line. And at that point, they separated. And Rosie Ruiz went over and declared, I'm an injured runner. Mm. They pulled her in. They recorded her time. And that was her registered time in the New York City Marathon. So she got a fraudulent time that she then used to qualify for the Boston Marathon 6 months later. So Susan Morrow came forward with her story. And to this day, Rosie Ruiz maintains that she ran the race. Really? She has not fessed up.
So does she still hold the title as like the third
fastest? They stripped her time and they awarded, they moved all the prizes down to
asterisk.
No asterisk. Okay. Yeah, it was, and she never really had any plausible story for how, you know, her best story was, I was just feeling really energetic this morning when I got up. And it is because of Rosie Ruiz, Karen, that they started instituting measures like RFID tags.
So when did they introduce RFIDs? Did they have the technology like 1981?
They started within just a couple of years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And it's so easy because it's like, no one has to really keep a time. It's all automatic. And then you can go online and check your time
happens. Of course. Of course. It's all
like
posted to the web today.
I checked my time like a minute after I crossed the finish line because I was like, I don't know what time I have. And it's, right there.
That makes sense.
Website.
I didn't even think about that, but of course they would have it,
So we're talking about fakes and decoys and bluffs, and so I'm going to tell you a crazy pants story I found about this guy who faked his own death.
Oh,
I love these. Love these.
So the person is Lord Timothy Dexter, and he was born in Massachusetts in 1748.
Whoa, that long ago.
Yeah, and he was like kind of a self-made man. He was poor, but he was an author and he was a go-getter. and he wrote a book, and it had tons of typos and it had tons of punctuation and grammatical errors. So he had to give it away for free. And then it went into 8 printings, and he was kind of a jokester, and people criticized him on the punctuation in the book. So when he reprinted it, he had a page in the back that was just full of commas and periods, like punctuation marks.
Like that. So what a jerk.
That's good. I like that.
So
make your own.
Yeah. DIY.
He wrote on it, place it as you please. So that's who we're dealing with. That's the guy that the story revolves around. So he did the oldest trick in the book. It comes up on sitcoms. It comes up in movies. It's so corny now, but maybe he invented it. He wanted to know what people thought of him, so he faked his own death.
No.
And this is the 1700s.
So it's not to, like, escape while you're really in a jam.
He just wanted to hear what people say about him when he's out of the room.
Yeah. So he faked his own death. 3,000 people came to his funeral.
Now, what did he do? How did he fake his own death?
He just told people that he died. Like,
I would believe him.
Like, he just
so like, I died.
Oh. He was a self-styled lord, so he was like, Lord Timothy Dexter died. You know,
he sent out like his own fake announcements.
Yeah,
basically.
He did, and he tried to get as many people as he could to go to his funeral. 3,000 people showed up. Huge. And then his wife was there, and she wasn't crying as hard as he thought she should be crying.
Oh, he didn't tell his wife.
No.
Oh, my God.
He wanted to know what she thought.
Wow.
Yeah, he was a piece of work.
You set yourself up there for some really potentially embarrassing, hurtful things. Yeah.
She wasn't really reacting the way he thought she should react when such a great person dies. So he came out and he beat her at the funeral.
We know how this goes.
This is insane. I imagine him like hiding in the back dressed like a little old lady or something and then just ripping off a wig. And I shouldn't joke about it, but I mean, he's attacking his wife at his own funeral.
I wish there were more first person accounts, but it was just like, this guy was crazy.
And you're right, it is. I have absolutely seen that plot on sitcoms.
Yeah, it's such a trope. Yeah. And I was like, was he the first?
Well, I just, you know, it's just such a simpler time. It was so much easier to fake your death back then.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You could just send out an announcement, oh, he's dead.
Well, as our constant listeners know, I was out sick last week for the sleeping episode. However, this did not mean that I didn't do my research for the sleeping episode. And
it's the only reason
far
we allowed you back.
Yeah, I definitely do not want to let this go to waste, because when I thought about sleeping, I was like, okay, I want to answer a very important question. Do dogs dream? We always see, it was recently, like, I was sitting at my computer, probably thinking about Good Job Brain, and I heard like yelps from the other room. You know, I heard a little dog, Ricky, going like, which are noises that he doesn't make, you know? And I'm just like, oh my God, he's just dreaming. He's like on his side, his paws are kicking.
Yeah, this is so funny.
And that's what we say. We say, oh, you know.
Just imagine he's chasing something.
Like, yeah, he's chasing rabbits or
like
whatever,
dream
right?
Dream hunting. Yeah.
So, but then again, it's like, well, is that really happening or not? There actually is an answer, so let's go in. You know, typically when I research Good Job Brain subjects, I'm like doing it with the utter dispassionate attitude of a scientist, like, okay, all right, I'm going to research something and I want to see if it's true or false or whatever.
I'll see where the facts take me.
This one I was really pulling for it to be true. Yeah. I really, really wanted dogs to dream. So let's find out. This all starts, as all great experiments do, with rats running in a maze. So a researcher at MIT a few years ago measured the brain signals of rats as they were running around on a track. And then it measured the brain signals of rats with little, you know, tiny little electrodes as they slept that night, and found that the signals that were coming out of the rats' brains during REM sleep, during the rapid eye movement portion of sleep where you dream, were basically identical to the signals that he was getting when they were running around in the track. They were so similar that he could essentially point the data and say, I'm pretty sure that at this point, the rat is dreaming about being in this particular part of the track, and whether or not the rat is moving or standing still. So at that point, the scientists who were looking at this were like, these rats are dreaming about running around in the maze. They're rehashing the day's activity because it's so close. It's so similar. Mm-hmm. So dogs' brains being much awesomer than rat brains.
That's a scientific term.
You know, if the rats can do it, clearly that we imagine that the dogs might. Okay. So if you want more proof than that, fine. There's a part of your brainstem, which is, oh, by the way, I'm going to go back into the brain, which is always really tricky for us on the show because I always screw something up. As it turns out, the brain, kind of complicated. So I apologize to any neuroscientists listening in, and please leave comments on the website if I'm wrong. There's a part of the brainstem called the pons, and the pons releases a chemical that not only does it put you into REM sleep, but it paralyzes you while you're sleeping. I know you guys talk about sleep paralysis, right? You actually want to be paralyzed when you are sleeping, because if you're not paralyzed while you're sleeping,
they're just walking around doing weird stuff. You will
sleepwalking disorders.
So the comedian that we like, Mike Birbiglia, right, has rapid eye movement behavior disorder.
Right.
He doesn't get paralyzed when he goes to sleep. So he gets up and acts out his dreams, which might involve jumping out a window and almost killing himself. So if you want to know what your dog is dreaming about, you can just take the pons out of your dog's brain.
What?
Now, they don't do this anymore.
Okay. Because, but they did.
They took the pons out of some brains of some dogs. Guess what happened?
They did stuff.
The dog would go to sleep and then go into REM sleep and then just get up and start acting out all the stuff they did during the day.
Just like taking out the inhibitor.
If you had a hunting dog, the hunting dog would flush out imaginary birds out of imaginary bushes. And they would go on point. You know how dogs would
go on point.
They would do that in their sleep. 100%, no question, dogs are dreaming about activities that they are doing.
Oh.
Yeah. But don't take out parts of your dog's brain.
Don't do that. Yeah, I'm sure Ricky was happy to hear that was not on your agenda.
I let him know that I was not about to do that. Yeah.
Dear dog, I will not take parts of your brain out.
Just to see what you were dreaming about. Yeah.
All right, so listeners of the show, I think if you've listened to all the past episodes of this year, you might notice a theme that a lot of my segments revolve around. It's going to be either body excrement or one of my favorite things to talk about are animals, specifically nightmare animals, animals that do weird, crazy things and will haunt your dreams. So here are some of our most nightmarish animals that I've talked about on the show. Sweet dreams. So there are a lot of species of hermit crabs. Some of the hermit crabs don't even need a shell, especially one particular species I'd like to talk about, and it's called the coconut crab.
Oh.
You might have heard of it. I remember Colin having a very negative reaction to a picture.
This is a nightmare creature.
You said you saw a picture of this. You're like, I would crap my pants. I would crap my pants. They actually don't have a shell, because what happens is their abdomens actually start growing harder. Mm. So actually, they don't need a shell for protection. Also, they're huge. They're the largest land-living arthropod in the world.
How big are they?
They're like bigger than your head.
Yeah.
I saw a photo of one covering a trash can lid.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Can you imagine taking out your trash and you're like, oh my God.
I'm not touching that.
Yeah. In sci-fi.
If I came out in the morning and they were like on my car, I would just sell the car. I mean, you know what? The crabs have it now.
Even after it left, you could never get back in the car.
Yeah.
You know, in video games or science fiction, you read about head crabs, right? Attaching your face and attacking your face. It looks like that. It totally looks like that. It's huge. And they do develop a tough exoskeleton, so they don't have to carry a shell anymore. And when they're smaller, they would. But they grow so big that they don't really have any predators anymore.
Yeah, they're just kind of just walking down the street. They're like, what?
But you talk about the trash can, Colin. They have amazing sense of smell, these crabs. And they eat a lot of things. They eat, you know, fruit. They actually do eat coconuts. Okay. So that's why they're called coconut crabs. They smell trash and they feed on carrion stuff sometimes. And so they would hang out in trash cans.
They're like tropical raccoons.
They are.
No thanks. Yeah. No thanks.
Oh, man.
Colin, we didn't tell you, but we have a coconut crab here today. He's backstage. He's been listening to the show. Let's bring him out.
He's been in the green room this whole time.
So they do eat coconuts. They're so smart. They know how to basically prepare a coconut. Like a coconut falls on the ground. They know how to strip away the husk with their claws. Uh-huh. And then they would climb the coconut tree with coconut in its claw, drop the coconut so it would break.
Mm. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
That's amazing. And that's just adaptive behavior.
They just know. Dude. That, they just totally know.
I just wait till they did that and I run and steal the coconut and run away.
Like, thanks for opening it, suckers. That's the hardest part.
Suckers.
Sweet, sweet coconut.
Yeah, you come out the next morning and there's 40 coconut crabs in your driveway. We hear you got something of ours.
dead silence, only the clicking of 40 claws.
So scary. One more last scary tidbit. The International Group for Historic Aircraft Recovery, known as TIGHAR.
A great acronym.
This group has approximated the whereabouts of where Amelia Earhart could have crashed and landed or ended up. They said that she probably most likely died on an inhabited tropical island in the Kiribati area. Some users wrote us and said that Kiribati is supposed to be pronounced Kiribati.
Right. I think after we talked about it on the show, someone said Kiribati or Kiribati.
Yeah. So I double checked. You can say it both on Kiribati / Kiribati.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, they're guessing that Amelia Earhart probably ended up there.
Huh.
And one of the theories why they can't find her full remains is because coconut crabs probably ate her bones her flesh.
I mean,
I was so much better off not knowing that.
Tropical raccoons, man. They get in there.
Nightmare fuel for everybody.
Wow, thanks.
Yeah, cool. Wow. Coconut crabs. All right, guys, it's time to dip into Karen's stash of nightmare animals.
Oh, no.
I want to introduce you guys to the bombardier beetle.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
Have you heard of that?
I think I've seen these on the Nature Channel before.
Oh, okay. Now, the bombardier beetle is just for, like, size. It's tiny. It's like half an inch, 1 centimeter long, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of like a big ant. And they're found in most places in the world, probably more common in the southern half of the globe, but not Antarctica. This creature has one of the most unbelievable but awesome defense mechanism in the animal kingdom. And so what happens is when the bug is threatened, the beetle will, number one, make a loud popping sound. And number two, it will fire a noxious boiling hot liquid from its butt.
Where does it
boiling hot?
Get the boiling hot liquid.
And it doesn't stop there. Their butt is like a gun turret. It can rotate and swivel any direction. It has a wide range, so if a predator is coming from the side, even in front of the bug,
it can shoot things in front of it.
Yes. Between its legs.
Wow.
It's crazy. And it actually has a really good aim. Like, the accuracy is pretty good. And serving up boiling spray. When I say boiling, it's near boiling. The temperature is near 100 degrees Celsius.
My goodness.
Boiling point of water. And we've come across, you know, lots of animals out there, especially with insects and bugs, that they will secrete some sort of liquid.
Right,
you know, usually it's smelly or it's foamy or it's sticky, whatever. But this is almost boiling hot. Okay, so the fluid itself is a mixture of two main things, hydroquinone and hydrogen peroxide.
Okay.
These fluids are naturally occurring for the bug, and the fluids are stored separately in two different chambers in the beetle's body.
It's like a little epoxy tube.
It is. It's like a reserve. So when the beetle is threatened, the muscles contract and causes both chambers to open.
Oh!
So then there's a third chamber, the mixing chamber, that these two liquids flow in. Now, when these two fluids come together, the reaction is super intense.
Yeah.
It's a super exothermic reaction.
That's where the heat
that occurs.
Yeah.
And, you know,
like a baking soda volcano kind of thing.
Yeah. So the reaction gives off a buttload of energy.
If you will. E.g.
Quite literally. And what happens is that the liquid, because of exothermic, heats up.
Mm.
And then the pressure and gas builds up. And the whole thing just explodes out from the butt valve.
Wow.
Oh.
And emitting a popping sound. And the sound is part of the reaction as well.
Oh, the
sound is...
It literally explodes out of its butt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it explodes inside its butt. And then
fraction of a second.
So I think this is where I think I had remember seeing it was on... Someone had done like a super high-speed film study of this beetle. And that was all I knew, is they were studying like how fast it releases. I had no idea that it was boiling hot and noxious fluid.
There's videos of it, and you can see how hot it is because you see kind of like steam or gas that comes out as the bug sprays.
Does the bug die?
No, it doesn't. Because what happens is the bug is structured so that the chambers where all these fluids are, they're padded. Or they're lined
insulated
with something.
Yeah.
So their organs are safe from...
It's got a firewall.
Yeah. I'm so disappointed...
Why?
...in the human...
But I know
we evolved all this stuff, but we don't have multi-directional explosive butts.
How many times on this show have we talked about
seriously
awesome things that come out from animal butts?
Right.
Wow.
Sounds kind of like a monster.
No, he sounds great.
Well, perhaps unintentionally, another theme that came along this year was backward audio. It was not coordinated or planned.
No,
but
it was just a hit.
Yeah, if you thought this was the year of the rooster, you're wrong. I don't think it's the year of the rooster anyway, so you're doubly wrong, because this was the year of backward audio for Good Job Brain. So one of my favorite Beatles songs is Rain. You guys know the song Rain?
Nope.
It was a single. It was an advanced single off of Revolver. So it came out in 1966. And, you know, this was a period in time when the Beatles were feeling particularly experimental with a lot of their music. And John Lennon in particular, out of the Beatles, was really interested in just new funky ways of recording. And one of the claims to fame for Rain, the song, is that it is considered generally one of the first rock songs to use backmasking. And do you guys know what backmasking is?
Recording something and then playing it backwards?
Yeah, more or less. But it's essentially recording something and then adding it onto a track backward so that when you play the track,
the Missy Elliott song.
Yeah,
exactly. That's a very well-known example is the Missy Elliott song. Okay. So John Lennon, the story goes, by his own telling, it was at the end of a day, he was listening to some of the recording sessions, and he put the loop from Rain in, and either accidentally or maybe semi on purpose played it backwards and was just really enthralled with the way it sounded. He's like, this is just great. It's funky. It's something new. So let me just play a little snippet of the song here for you. So this is the last few seconds of Rain.
Interesting. It sounds like they're singing in English.
Doesn't sound backwards.
Right.
It just sounds weird, but it doesn't sound like...
Now, I've gone ahead and reversed it, by which I mean played it forward. Would you guys like to hear that?
Yeah.
All right. So that was pretty much it, kind of just a little throwaway fun effect, but is considered the first example of a rock song putting backmasking in.
I've heard of this trick before, but I didn't know that it was this song was the first one.
People, you know, certainly avant-garde artists had sort of experimented with music and things, but this is sort of the first pop
mainstream
rock song.
Yeah.
Right. So flash forward a couple years, and if you're a Beatles fan or a trivia fan, you may be aware of the Paul is Dead conspiracy theory, which was an idea that got in the heads of some fans that Paul McCartney had been killed in a car accident and was replaced by a fake Paul, an imposter Paul. And more specifically, the theory was that the Beatles were dropping hints about this in their songs.
And album artwork
album covers,
and
everywhere. Right. The fact that Paul is not wearing shoes walking across the street on the cover of Abbey Road.
Right. Or that he's the only one turned away from you on Sgt. Pepper's and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Right. And one of the really strong pieces of evidence that people latched onto is that off of Revolution 9, you can hear backmasking versions of Turn Me On Dead Man, Turn Me On Dead Man, which is supposed to be John Lennon's, you know, sort of admission to the listeners that Paul is dead. And you can go find the sample, and I think it's a great example of if you want to hear it, you can hear it.
Yeah.
And the Beatles, of course, Paul was not dead. They denied this. So this was sort of one of the first examples, though, of people starting to look for sort of nefarious messaging in records.
Satanic messaging.
So that's what I would like to talk to you guys about.
Satanic messaging.
Fad isn't even the right word, but the mania that
hysteria.
Hysteria, thank you. The hysteria over hidden satanic messages that swept America in the late 70s and early 80s. This is, you know, moving into the late 70s now, this was when people started really getting interested in subliminal advertising, okay? Mm-hmm. You know, and particularly there's a guy named Brian Key, and he's the guy you've probably seen who was convinced that the word sex appeared in ads everywhere. Mm. You know, his idea is that if you put the word sex hidden in an ad for soda or crackers, that people will form a subliminal association and they'll want to buy that brand. No one legitimately really believes this who's actually studied it. They've not been able to show any connection between subliminal messaging, whether it is or isn't there. But it is a good example of you see what you want to see. In the 70s, there were a lot of conservative Christian groups and conservative parents groups that were starting to get concerned of hidden evil messages in rock music. And in particular, there was a DJ named Michael Mills, and he went on a crusade to convince people that Stairway to Heaven, okay?
Uh-huh. Yes,
famous
classic.
Led Zeppelin classic sure. song. This was his sort of his token great example of hidden satanic messages. That uh-huh. Stairway to Heaven, if you played it backwards, there was a patch that said, "Here's to my sweet Satan." And let me play this for you guys very, very quickly. And here's the segment in question played forward.
Yes, there are two paths you can go by, but in the long run, there's still time to change the road you're on.
Oh, that's my favorite part of the song.
Yeah, perfectly normal, right? Yeah. All right, so here's that segment reversed. So in his ears, it is as clear as day that they are singing, "Here's to my sweet Satan."
Sure, and when you combine it with what the words are that it's intended to be, you will hear that because of the power of suggestion of the words being there.
Right, right.
It's like by chance. I don't know.
Well, yeah. So Michael Mills, and there was another big figure, there's Pastor Gary Greenwald of California, and they basically took up the torch for spreading the message that rock music,
wow.
this insidious message, is getting inside our children's heads, mm-hmm. and they would go on tours and speaking tours. Pastor Greenwald would hold record burnings. You know, you'd have just like a mass record burning and come out and just trash those evil satanic records. This wasn't just sort of a fringe belief. I mean, this really bubbled up.
It's bad. I wish it were true because it would be awesome to embed secret codes in music. Like if you could say words forwards and backwards and they had different meanings, but it's not
completely impossible to actually do that.
If we could design language again, maybe we would have done that where you could say one thing
backwards and would say one thing forwards.
It's like an auditory
palindrome. That's
creature
theme, actually.
No one had really done any serious research on the two things of like, one, can your brain actually understand something that's being said backward? Right. And then two, if your brain does understand it, can it influence behavior?
Right, exactly.
In the 1980s, they undertook an actual study of this phenomenon. Can we play backward encoded messages for people, and are they intelligible? And what they found is no. They did find that it's just a very human phenomenon to want to make things intelligible. And that, as you say, you can kind of hear some words in there. What they also found, though, is that people would only hear the supposed satanic messages if they were primed ahead of time. They would only hear them if they said, "All right, we want you to listen and see if you can hear this." But basically, it was no better than chance otherwise if they heard anything. Yep. And then secondarily, they found no influence of hearing these messages on your actual behavior. Here's where it gets just crazy for me. Now, I want to remind you, all right, this is 1980s, okay? The state legislature of California passed a bill that stated distributing material that contains backward messages without public notice is an invasion of privacy. Opened up the distributor to lawsuits. This is the state of California legislature passed this bill.
So I know Prince has a song, "Darling Nikki," and at the end of it, there's a section he's singing backwards. Did they have to put out a notice saying that there's backwards
music?
I guess
he would have been arrested in California.
By all the research I can do, it seems that there were actually no teeth to any of these various pieces of legislation. But, you know, I mean, like a lot of politicians, you want to grandstand and pass them. But still, the state of Arkansas, all right, this one goes even further. In Arkansas, they passed a bill, and now this is verbatim. They had to place stickers on records and tapes that say, Warning, this record contains backward masking, which may be perceptible at a subliminal level when the record is played forward.
That makes me want to buy it.
Yeah, I think like a lot of things, like if all you're going to do is just, yeah, if you make something seem forbidden, kids are going to want to have it more.
Yeah.
In the one like happy little twist to this story, again, so this was passed by the Arkansas legislature. It went to the governor's desk for approval. And it was vetoed and sent back by Governor Bill Clinton.
Oh, wow.
Yes, yeah. In a moment of clarity. So thank you, Bill, at a 30-year remove.
You know what's funny is Gore's wife was responsible for...
Yes, that's right.
The tipper sticker.
The Parents Resource Music Council, which started in 1985 and was very, very heavily born out of this hysteria. Mm-hmm. Like, they came into being and one of their first goals was seeing, are there really hidden satanic messages in our rock music.
Man, people are bored.
You know, people are bored and maybe a little...
they want to help you, protect you.
It died down for a bit. They said one of the reasons that the hysteria died down was because as people moved away from records into CDs, it wasn't as easy to play things backwards.
Yeah.
And there are people out there who still really, really believe that the Church of Satan is actively working with rock bands to put their messages in their songs.
I wonder how much that sponsorship is.
Yeah, no. Have we been approached yet for the backwards? Satan advertising?
Yeah, in the pocket of big Satan. So the moral of the story is you hear what you want to hear.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Are there any words or phrases that are auditory palindromes where it's not that they're spelled the same way, you know, forwards and backwards? It's that when you say it, it sounds the same forward and backwards.
Right.
I found some.
Oh, cool.
Oh, great.
So each one of you guys, including me, have a piece of paper with a weird phrase on it. I want you to say it normally, and I'm going to play it backwards to see if it really does work.
Okay.
All right. Well, Dana, since you're a fan of Twilight.
Thanks for calling me out.
I gave you the phrase...
New moon.
Okay, let's play it backwards to see if it actually works.
New moon. Whoa. No.
That's where the devil
lives. Whoa.
Wow. I'm a little scared right now.
That's a beautiful language.
Yeah.
Try it again.
Kind of.
New moon.
I like fake backwards. I kept doing that the last episode. I'm like,
it's surprisingly easy to do.
Yeah. And then, Colin, I gave you a phrase.
Ominous cinema.
All right, let's play it backwards.
Ominous cinema. Whoa!
That was scary.
That was really close.
That was close. All right, and I have work crew. Okay. Here it is backwards.
Work crew.
Whoa,
no.
Wow. Ominous cinema is the winner.
I wonder if it's because it was longer, maybe? Like, both of your guys were two syllables?
Where did you find those?
Or so I was just scouring the internet looking for good ones.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Well, anyways, so my music round, prepare yourself. I pick some of the biggest hits from oldies to even hits today.
Okay.
Big hits, and I've reversed it.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to play it backwards, and I want you guys to guess what song. Oh, buzz in.
Okay.
And all tell me who is the artist and what song. Here are some tips that I've learned while I was editing. The tone of the artist kind of remains the same.
Okay.
So that's a good clue if you can figure out the voice, even though it's they're speaking backwards gibberish.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is like the bass line or the drum line sounds kind of familiar because they're always in repetition.
Right,
you can get a feel of it. So those are my two tips.
Cool.
And, we'll see. We'll see how this goes.
All right.
Here we go. Number one. Dana.
Oh, it's Carly Rae Jepsen. Call Me Maybe.
Yes, Call Me Maybe. You can kind of hear it.
Yeah, that was really weird. Totally. Just the as you said, it was like it was the beat and the quality of her voice.
Mm-hmm. Okay, number two. Yeah.
Yeah.
Queen and David Bowie under pressure.
Yes.
That's great. Yeah.
Especially the end there.
Wow. Man, Freddie Mercury, good. Forward, backward. Yeah. That guy can sing.
Good. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, number 3. That little ending is definitely the trick.
Oh, Sugar Pie Honey Bunch?
Yes. All right, I can't help myself.
Yeah.
Oh, can't help. By... I always forget.
The Temptations?
It's not the Temptations.
You're not tempted by this sugar. But you
Four
are.
Four Tops?
Yeah.
Four Tops.
Yeah.
All right, next one. Dana?
Journey, Don't Stop Believin'.
Yes. Yeah.
And they must have had an auditory palindrome in there, because the on and on part. And on.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
On and on.
It sounded
and on
just
and
like forward. It did. Yeah.
All right, next one.
Oh,
that sounds like French.
I was just saying, sounds like he's singing in French.
Dana.
That was Gin and Juice. Yes. Snoop Dogg.
Snoop Dogg.
Wow.
That was good.
That was like French Snoop.
And man, I really like
this. I like that a lot.
Music
yeah.
backwards is good.
And lastly. Dana.
It's Robin Thicke, Blurred Lines.
Yes!
I was like, oh, who sings it?
Very good. Blurred Lines by Robin Thicke. Good! Well, that was very fun. I thought it was very fun.
That was fun.
That was fun.
Good job.
And now we know there are auditory palindromes. You just have to try them out. But Ominous Cinema.
On and on and on and on.
On and on and on and on. Well, that was a good stroll down on memory lane, and thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in to this episode, to last week's episode, the weeks before, just throughout the year. We really appreciate it. You know, there's so many moments in my everyday life that I'm always reminded by something we talked about on the show.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
When I was running... you know, half marathons, I always think about Rosie Ruiz, you know,
right.
cheating. And sometimes I'd be like, oh, I can just kind of
be awesome
and cut a little bit, but I can't. Well, hopefully you have those moments too, listeners, reminded how cool this world is and how interesting and weird it is.
And since this is our final episode for 2013, we would like to say that we will see you all in the new year.
Yeah.
The future.
And you can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and also on our website, goodjobbrain.com. And that's our show. See you guys 2014.
Bye. Bye.